Well, good morning. This is Glenn Coble, and we're here as soon as I figure out what I'm doing here. We're here bringing you A Progressive Life, which is the name of my program, and it's kind of trying to support those in the world that are trying to move forward rather than backward. That's what progressive kind of means. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to specifically talk about the effect of money in politics, the effect of goodness in politics. And also, I was asked during the week by somebody who had heard that I had been involved in the Pan American Games back in the 80s. And I was. So I'm going to. That's going to kind of be my little biographical thing that I do first off today. If you're interested in calling in, the number is 740-383-9944. Now, you might notice my voice has changed a little bit. I'm starting to get it back a little. I will occasionally cough, and unfortunately, that is not... helping me any, because I fell down during the week. I'm becoming a stereotypical little old man. I actually fell on my front stoop this week and cracked my back, not literally, but figuratively. I did hear it pop, but I think I just bruised my ribs in the back. But every time I cough, the pain is pretty intense. And I can't even sleep on a flat bed. I can sleep on my couch fine with my puppy dog on my lap, but I have a very hard time laying flat on my side. I can lay flat on my back, but not flat on my side. Oh, well, life continues on, and there's no sense in worrying about it, because all I can do is try to get better. I hope you all are feeling better. It's nice outside. Let me check here. I was going to let you know exactly what the temperature is at this moment. Supposedly it's 51 degrees outside. We went over 50. That is excellent. We hopefully will get up even higher today. I've enjoyed watching the grass come back from under the layers and layers and layers of snow. Anyway, back to the little biographical section of my show. I was in my 40s, I guess, and I was invited by one of my former students to come help at the Pan American Games, which were being held in Indiana at the time. So it was back in the mid-80s, something like that. And my former student was the director of the press contingency for the yachting section of the Pan American Games. And the yachting section was having to be held on Lake Michigan because the event actually was being held in Indianapolis. So we were up in Michigan City, and we had our own opening to the games with all the flags and the pageantry and all the foreign countries marching around with behind their flags. It was totally exciting and very interesting, but a lot of problems incurred during the event. It was a fairly small venue. It surrounded the harbor there in Michigan City, and they had to put up like 20-foot chain link fence around the athletes' village area. and there I go. And it was kind of fun, but problematic. No one was allowed in that section unless you had a specific badge. And I did, because I was director of the media relations for part of the group. And so we got to go in and meet a lot of very fine athletes. A lot of people don't think sailors are athletes, but many of the boats that these young people sailed on were very short, 14, 18, 20-foot boats that required a great deal of strength. And even more than that, a great deal of intelligence, because you had to know when to tack, know who, you know what the angles were, had to know exactly how you got the most out of each sail. And the reason why I was invited, other than the fact that my former student was the head of the group, was that I had raced sailboats out of Chicago, Michigan City, Benton Harbor, for years. But on the bigger side, 30-foot, 31-foot sailboats is what I had raced. And but it still gave me some intelligence about the event. So we most of the boats that we watched race were under 20 feet. And some of them were, you know, the basically sailboards with, surfboards with sails on them. And that was actually one of the more exciting sections to watch, because there was very close sailing. But on the way over, I decided I was going to take my little Flying Junior. And a Flying Junior is about, I think it's 14, 15 feet long. I had kind of put it together out of a whole cloth. I'd gotten it used and gotten the trailer used, and I had enough sails that I could sail it, but none of them were new, and most of them were very old. But I thought I'd go, and when I wasn't doing anything else, I'd just putz around Lake Michigan. And that was kind of fun. Got over there and plopped her in the water and went sailing. I thought I was really smart. One of the young ladies who was part of our press contingency went with me. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a little squall developed. And the sails and the lines that were holding me upright decided it was time to part. And we were out about 2 miles out on Lake Michigan, and we flipped the thing. Fortunately, there was a motorboat not too far from us and saw us go over and took us ashore. But I'm sure I was totally red-faced as this supposed sailing intelligentsia person had knocked down his own little boat. Anyway, we had a pretty easy time getting back into the harbor. That was the last time I sailed that boat, as a matter of fact, because I had an awful lot of repair I had to do after that. It was kind of interesting, because the Cubans were a big contingency in this group, and there was a great deal of security involved. Like I said, you couldn't get into the village, athlete's village, without the proper credentials. And unfortunately, there was kind of a snafu in the credentials, and some people got the, I'm going to make this up because I don't remember exactly what it was, but if your credential had a capital A on it, you could go anywhere, and if it had a small A on it, you could only go a few places. Well, they handed out the smaller A's to some of the people and gave bigger A's to people that shouldn't have them. So it was kind of, we had to be careful when we were in that area. Got to meet an awful lot of very nice people. International events like that are great fun, because you get to talk with people, and most people speak English. Fortunately for me, since I don't speak anything but English, I can say a few words in German and a few words in Spanish, and that's about it. It's great fun to meet these people from foreign lands that ask you questions that really make you think. A lot of them want to know about our government. A lot of them, and this is a long time ago, I'm sure things have changed quite a bit since then, but they asked questions about how the president was doing it back then. Let's see, I can't even remember who it was back then. Might have been Reagan. I don't remember. Anyway, lots of questions. Wanted to know what we thought of, what our opinions were of the Soviet Union and stuff like that. And communism, and that was kind of a big topic of discussion because of this Cuban group that was there. Excuse me. Anyway, they were there, and they were not terribly outspoken. As a matter of fact, they pretty much stayed to themselves, and I believe that was by design. I don't think their handlers wanted them to go off and talk to too many people. But we got to talk to people from Israel, and we got to talk to people from England, and people from Japan, and so it was kind of fun, and the event was kind of fun. Now, we started out because so many people that were in charge, and I'm sure this is true in many of the events. By the way, I had been asked to work the Olympics, which were like two years ahead of this. I think that was in 84. And I had been asked to work the Olympics and as a press person, and decided against it because I was told that I was going to have to pay all my own way, and I was going to have to rent my own room and everything. Later, I found out that many of the people that were press contingency had it all paid for, and I kind of wish I had done that. But that's how I got the invitation. I'm pretty sure that helped me get the invitation to the Pan American Games. Anyway, I forgot where I was heading with that. Okay. The snafu that we had was a problem that the people in their wisdom who were in charge of security would not allow our press boats to get within no closer than one mile from the course. And the problem with that was, even with a 600 millimeter lens, the sailboats, the pictures of the sailboats, they were little tiny triangles way off in the distance. So the press people were not very happy, the photographers, because mainly we had the photographers on the boats that we took around. I was in charge of one boat, and David, my friend, was in charge of another boat, and I think we had a third boat. But if we got anywhere close, the Coast Guard would come and shoo us off. So my photographers, one of the guys that was with me was with the Chicago Tribune. He said, there's no sense in us even covering this because we can't get any good photographs. And we're not going to put a picture of a little tiny triangle of sail on the front page of the Chicago Tribune. So David and I, my friend, started fighting the good fight with the powers that be, and they allowed us to get within a half mile of the course. Well, that helped, but it didn't help very much. And it took us about 3 or 4 days before they finally allowed us to take the sailboats actually onto the course. I mean, take the press boats onto the course as long as we stayed behind the sailboats, which was understandable. You don't want a wake causing any problem. And we'd stay behind them, and then they would get some decent photographs. And we actually lost the guy from the Sports Illustrated because he just couldn't wait around for as long as some of them could. And he just packed up and left. And so we had no pictures of the sailing venue at the Pan American Games that were being held in the United States. It was a shame. But we did have several people that did get some good photographs, and we got a lot of good attention about the Pan American Games that year. And so it became rather successful for us. We did get past all the security problems with the people with the wrong badges and stuff like that. No incidents. But excuse me, I'm sorry about this cold. Anyway, one of the more exciting parts was the closing of the games. Now, we didn't get to go down to Indianapolis for the big closing. We had our own closing in Michigan City, but it was pretty impressive with the fireworks and the bands and the athletes marching around the field, and it was quite interesting. I would recommend it for anyone. Had a great time. That's one of the things I've always tried to do, as being a progressive most of my life, I've always tried to move forward rather than backwards. And one of the things about being like that is you tend to take on chores that you probably don't have any right to take on. And that was one of them. I really didn't know what I was doing when I got into it. I knew what I was doing in certain areas of what I was doing, but it was a very fast learning event, especially the problem with all the security and the credentials and that sort of thing. But I would highly recommend that you think about moving your life into a mode where you try to get ahead rather than stay stagnant or move backwards. Life is so enjoyable. I mean, there are so many things you can do. Even at my age, I like to move forward. I like to do things. Well, I ran for office last year. Most people would tell me I was nuts. Well, quite a few people have already done that. But I went for office, and I learned and met so many wonderful people, people that were Republicans that hated me but asked good questions, people that were Democrats that asked some stupid questions but liked me. Yeah, it was just a wonderful experience. One of the things that I really didn't look forward to when I first started was going around knocking on all the doors. But it didn't take me very long, maybe one day, and I found out most people are pretty kind to you when you knock on their door. And most people will treat you with some respect, and especially if you're there for a reason rather than to try to sell them something. And I was there for a reason. I guess I was trying to sell myself to them. But most people treated me with kindness. I met a 96-year-old lady that had grown up in as a child been in Nazi Germany, and she gave me some insight that I would never have had. I met some young kids that had no idea how the election worked, and yet they were interested enough that we had some very good discussions about it. Many of which of those people were just turning 18. I had three or four of those kids actually help me run some of my canvassing over in Union County. I met a lot of farmers, which I really don't have much of an opportunity to meet living in the heart of Marion. And I had always been a farmer's friend, believing that we needed to support our farm people. Support their needs support their requirements. And the more I got to meet, the more I was reassured that my opinion was correct there. One of the problems, though, that we do have, especially in politics, but in government, is the ugly head of money. And I know that some people say, well, if you're a progressive, you want money in politics. No, I don't want money in politics. I would love to see us find a way where we have no money in politics, including maybe using public broadcasting to introduce our candidates rather than allowing them to buy ad space. I can remember, I'm sure many of you can remember, when we didn't allow candidates to advertise until a certain time right before the election. Back then, they didn't allow people to advertise medicine, which would go a long way right now, I believe, to helping the United States. They didn't allow people to advertise tobacco, which early when I was very young, they did. As a matter of fact, it was a sign of that you were cool if you smoked. That's why I started smoking, and smoked for about, let's see, how long did I smoke? About 15 years, something like that. I'm very happy that when I turned 27 and had my first child, I realized that was not something I wanted my child to see me doing. And I haven't smoked since then. Anyway, but the money that gets involved takes away from the honest reason why people are running for election. I've met several people, and I've met some pretty high-up people, that you can tell the reason why they're running is not to help their fellow man, but to help themselves and pad their own ego and pad their own bank account. And that is just so disappointing that people are running for that reason. As a matter of fact, John Adams said, "Government is instituted for the common good, for the protection, safety, prosperity, and happiness of the people, and not for profit, honor, or private interest of any man, family, or class of men." Let me read that again. Government is instituted for the common good, for the protection, safety, prosperity, and happiness of the people, and not for profit, honor, or private interest of any man, family, or class of men. John Adams said that. That was a long time ago, and there wasn't that much money involved in politics back then. However, you never know. People who have money find, well, people who don't have money find ways of, I'm really sorry, find ways of using their money to help them move forward, whether it's legally or whatever way they can. One of the things that I've been railing against for years, ever since it was introduced, is Citizens United. Now, the fact that my opponent had received several thousands of dollars from what they call dark funds, which means nobody had to tell where that money came from, could have come from Putin. Who knows? There's a lot of money that could have come from Putin. But, and that's another story. Why would we want, and money has become very popular in a lot of countries and their politics. And the reason why is because if they have money, then they can buy politicians and they can buy favorable legislation. And the one of the biggest countries in the world that's involved in the operation of money in government is Russia and their oligarchy. That's how you become a politician in Russia. You buy your way there. And I just believe that Citizens United is directing us in that direction, and I believe that we should eventually do away with that. As a matter of fact, I have a list of the different large groups that put money in the last election. The NRA put $35 million into a dark fund. The Chamber of Commerce, $29 million. Americans for Prosperity, $13 million. American Future Fund, $12 million. I won't go and list them all, but eight of the 10 top donors to political dark funds were all right-leaning. And that's kind of scary when you think of it that way, that money can control what our government does for us. And our government is supposed to be for the people, not for corporations. They're supposed to be for the people that are trying to make us a better country. I've kind of lost my place here on my iPhone, naturally. I do that occasionally. You'll have to give me 1 second here, please. Well, I'm kind of lost. I'm just going to continue on what I had going on here. The money in politics has always bothered me, and I believe we can get out of it. Like I said earlier, one of the things we can easily do is use our public broadcasting system as a way to run the PR side of politics. If you don't have to pay to advertise, you don't owe anybody anything. And public broadcasting could easily do that. I know the Republican Party right now does not want public broadcasting to stay around. I have no idea why they don't want public broadcasting to stay around, but they seem to be anti-funding of public broadcasting. If you did not allow political advertising on pay-for media, that would you would have to find out something about the politicians somewhere. So you would naturally gravitate toward public broadcasting, both television and radio. And there could easily be groups like League of Women Voters who publicize positions of politicians. It's been my experience twice. I spoke at a League of Women Voters event, and I was very impressed with the fact of how straight down the middle they went. If you were, you would hardly know whether you were Republican or Democrat based on who participated, unless the candidate themselves told you what they were. I'm not real fond of the idea. This past time, they wouldn't allow a good friend of mine, Janet Garrett, who was running for the office of representative against Jim Jordan. They wouldn't allow her to speak. They did allow her toward the end. They finally succumbed and allowed her to have a brief statement, but wouldn't really allow her to participate in the event because Jim Jordan refused to. Now, that is, I believe, a way of denying public speech. If both parties are accorded the invitation, I think if you don't want to go, you don't have to go. That's fine. But if you don't want to go, your opponent is going to have a better speaking place. They will be heard by more people. And I think that's probably not a bad thing because our government needs free speech to move forward. Without free speech, all you have is junk. The advertising, as far as I'm concerned, is all junk, Republican or Democrat or independent. I've been involved enough to know that people love to find information. They love to find dirt on other people. Why that's so, I have no idea. We're going through it right now with the governor of Virginia. And the dirt that's involved there was dug up by a group that was kind of vague and really didn't like him because of his position, apparently, on abortion, but dug that stuff up. Now, I'm not condoning it. I think it's disgusting and stupid. If he had done it as a high school kid, maybe forgivable. But he did it as a medical student, which I think by that time you ought to at least be aware of who you are and what you stand for. And at least I thought I did then. I quite frankly didn't, though. I remember going to events where we argued about the benefits or lack thereof of war. It was during the Vietnam War, and I had no idea what I was talking about. I thought I did, but all I was doing was spreading talking points. And talking points are probably the worst thing that ever happened to politics. Talking points take very in-depth issues and turn them into 20 words or 30 words, which it can't be done. Things are never that simple. And I always feel bad when I hear these politicians jump on their talking points, and they may be asked, is the sun up today? And they will immediately go to a talking point about why the opponent is against chickens. Or say, it's just, it makes no sense. And I think we ought to hold our politicians on both sides of the aisle, all three sides of the aisle, whatever. I think we ought to hold them accountable for that type of discussion. Again, if you're interested in calling in, 740-383-9944. I'm trying to look up my notes again, which I'm really struggling to find. I think I canceled them. So I'm going to look that. That's exactly what I did. One of the points that I also think about democracy is democracy was founded not on money. I'm sure there was money involved. I'm sure some of those rich old guys that were, quite frankly, running the government were well-to-do. Many of them were slave owners. But democracy was founded based on the fact that men are all people, but at that time, men are inherently good, and they believe in fairness, and they believe in honesty of the people. Now, my question is, does that still hold? And I don't think it does. We have a president who, I think the last time they fact-checked him, he had told 8,000 lies or something like that in public. And it doesn't even seem to bother people. And the other part of that that bothers me is, having come from a Methodist minister's family, how can a group of religious people support a candidate, any candidate, who believes that grabbing women, telling lies, cheating, avoiding telling anything that, or just changing your subject, how can those people support a person like that? And it seems to be that it comes down to they tend to be one issue voters. All they care about is they're pro-life, or they believe that government should be run on 2 cents. Now, government can't be run on 2 cents. Anyway, that's one of the things that bothers me. Let's see. I had a quote here. Here it is. This quote from Barack Obama, and I don't care what you think of Barack Obama. I personally think he's the best president that that I have had in my 72 years. And there's one or two Republicans that I'll throw in there, too. I when I was young, I was a Republican. It should be the power of our vote, not the size of our bank account, that drives our democracy. That was said by Obama. And that's exactly what I was getting to. The size of our account should have nothing to do with the size of our brain and the size of our thoughts and the size of our improvements of our government. If we're not trying to improve our government, we are going backwards. What is ruling? One of the things I've looked up is, what is ruling Russia? Well, right now, oligarchy and money. And that's one of the common goods between our two countries, the United States right now and Russia. Both seem to worship money. Now, you will remember that the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. It doesn't say money is the root of all evil. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. And a lot of people that I listened to, a man in a grocery store the other day, just tearing some of the Democratic candidates apart, all he was doing was spreading talking points that he had heard from a friend, I'm sure in a bar or something, that had nothing to do with reality. If you don't know what you're talking about, and none of us know everything that we're talking about, but try to keep critical analysis involved when you're talking. One of the things that's been brought up recently with some of the Democratic candidates is the idea of the super rich paying a little bit more taxes. Now, back in the 90s, back in the 60s and 70s, the super rich, those making, and back then super rich was multimillionaires as opposed to multibillionaires, but the super rich did pay a base tax of 90%. 90%. Now, of course, they had, we had loopholes. We had things like, well, right now you can declare the interest on your house, but back then you could declare any interest that you paid. And there were lots of rules that allowed those people not to pay 90%, but they were still paying a lot more than the 35% now. I think we have someone on the phone. I'm going to try and get them on board. Hello? You're on the air. Apparently, hello? You're on the air.
You're still there?
Yep, here we are. Gotcha.
Apparently. Hold on. You're on the air.
Hold on there.
Yeah, here we are. Turning the radio off.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I guess my question to that was, you were talking about President Trump. How, I guess I'll ask this with another question. It's like, how could people support President Bill Clinton when he was accused of allegedly committing 20 rapes? In a climate like this, accused of one, would finish your career, but that was back in the 90s, I suppose. And but here he was, his whole sordid history laid out from his start in Oxford, England, to Arkansas, and then Paula Jones, who filed a sexual harassment complaint against him that went all through his presidency.
Well, and to this,
which he settled out of court for.
And to this day, a lot of people, are, including yourself, are asking that question. I think it's a good question. I think people should ask that question.
I mean, four of his accusers were at the debate between Trump and President, I mean, Hillary Clinton.
They were brought there by Trump, yes.
That was like the second or third debate, I believe. And all four of them, including Paula Jones, was there to stare at President Bill Clinton. And but yet, why is he not in jail?
Well,
I mean, I
can't answer that question. I can answer one question: is he stayed there because of the will of the people, and he was impeached. He wasn't prosecuted, but he was impeached. And I think you bring up very good points. And I'm not sure that it was ever truly satisfying the response either way, whether he was guilty or not guilty. The 20 rapes I hadn't heard, and I have a very distinct feeling that probably not very many of those were taken to court. I don't think any of them were taken that far.
Well, the first one didn't want to pursue it. She just wanted to be away from it. Of course, that got him. He had to leave Oxford because of that controversy, and he came back home.
Well, and that also brings up another point. He was well supported financially. He had he was very good politician. He had a wonderful way of talking to people, especially the people that liked him. So he had a lot of things going for him, but money was one of the things.
That's another reason to get money out of politics. Now, I'm not going to stand up for him. That was a long time ago, and I can't remember.
Yeah, that's what detractors also say. It was a long time ago. We need to focus on the now. The only problem is that the past is still the now.
Yeah, and if you don't learn from the past, you're not going to learn. I agree with you, caller. I absolutely do agree with you. I can't remember whether I voted for him or against him. Back then, I was kind of flip-flopping quite a bit.
I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for him either time. I voted for Ross Perot. Both times. I mean, I suppose I'm one of those ones that split the vote and got him to win. But I mean, Bush was weak.
Yeah.
And so was Dole.
Well, you know,
and I couldn't see myself vote for either one of them.
And that's a problem we're going to look at coming up here in the near future. Is I think the guy's name is Rush. The gentleman who's running as an independent, who Democrats are going crazy that he's going to steal the vote away from Democrats and therefore allow Trump to have another go of it. I really believe that we've got to find a
way to the belt, because they got three women fighting against each other now.
Yeah, but eventually that will be primaried out.
And you've got Cory Booker that's running.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hopefully all of this comes out. I highly doubt it with the media the way it is, as protective as they are of Democrats as they are.
I disagree with you on that, but okay. I do disagree with the caller on that, but go ahead.
No, I'm pretty sure that they're very protective over Democrats. They have been for the last 3 years plus. But Kamala Harris, when she was Attorney General of California back a few years ago, challenged a federal court ruling, appealed it. From what I understand, their court ruling stated that they wanted because of the overpopulation in the prisons, they wanted the nonviolent offenders, like the ones who had been picked up for marijuana convictions, for example, released. Placed on early release. And she fought against that. Basically, her statement was that it would deplete the prison job pool. And I'm like,
I had never heard that.
So sanctioning slavery, in a manner of speaking, because that's what you're doing. The prison pool cannot leave. They're behind walls and they're working, and you went and appealed it because it would deplete the prison job pool.
Well,
I hope that comes out again, but, you know, I don't know.
It seems to me that most of the Democrats that are running for office are for reform of our prison situation and would not say something like that. And I quite frankly can't verify what you said or say anything against it, because I hadn't heard that from her. I will have to look that up. I truly appreciate your input, and I think that's what we need to do. We need to talk to each other about this stuff. Maybe we'll learn something if we open our ears and close our mouths for a few minutes and listen to the other person and their points. I truly appreciate your call. I'm going to have to let you go here because I'm running out of time here. I got a couple minutes left, but I do appreciate your call, caller, and keep on thinking. Be critical. Like you are.
Yep.
Okay. Bye. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much. That's wonderful to get some response like that. Now, I know there are people out there that are listening. They're saying, how could you let him say things like that? The reason why is because if I don't know for facts, and I can't know some of that stuff because kind of caught me off guard, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm going to say, let's talk about it. Let's move forward. Let's be progressive. And the gentleman is absolutely right. If in fact, Clinton had raped 20 people like he suggested, I would love to see him behind bars. I'm not so certain that that's been adjudicated in that direction, but I will look further into that. And we got to be careful again of talking points that pop up Fox News is notorious for putting talking points out there that make it sound real, but it might not be real. There are also some, as the caller would suggest, there are some liberal stations that do the opposite side of that, and I absolutely agree that we can't listen to everything. We need to be critical in our listening. Please, when you hear these things like the caller was talking or other people, don't take it for facts. Look it up. If you don't know, don't just assume that because that guy was talking like he knew what he was talking about, that he's right. We need to be that way. We need to take money out of politics. We need to think about our vote. We need to care about our vote, and we need to care about each other. And that's one of the things that we tend not to be doing anymore, and I hope that we can find a way to bring all of us back together. We're going to have an election here in 2020 that may give us an idea of where we stand on a lot of this stuff. Anyway, it's getting about that time where I'm going to have to get out of here. I really appreciate the opportunity of talking to you. I appreciate the caller calling in and giving his viewpoints. I'm not going to say he's right or he's wrong. I'm going to say he's thinking. And that's what we want. We want somebody to be thinking. Think about your answers to these questions. And I hope that we'll get to talk to you next week on Monday again, as A Progressive Life will be on the air again from about 11:15 to about 12. And it's just about time for us to get the heck out of here. Have a great day.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, the place to talk. From presidential nominee, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Okay, well, let's here we go. It's announcement time.
I want to write myself on an independent ticket and run for president of the United States.
What inspired this?
A lot of the situations where it's quite evident that it's time for a change. Everything must change. If there were no butterflies, if there were no caterpillars, there'd be no butterflies. Change, change, change. That's what it's time for, Scott. You know it. Terry Tackett knows it. Scott Anthony knows it. Brianna knows it. It's time for a change. Not just in the housing market. I'm talking about globally. Our United States government is spending more money on building prisons and earning money per capita of inmates, and then won't give a darn about cutting school spending. Our teachers and our educators are underpaid, if you ask me, underpaid. Our kids need to compete with other nations like China. The list goes on. I'm just sick and tired of walking up to little children and them being clueless without a PC.
WWGH Radio, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, the place to talk. Find us on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Look for us on Facebook by searching WWGH.